You don't scare me. Work on it.
All right, this is very exciting. We got a genuine star joining us right now. So here's the deal. I mean, I could read the resume, but that would take up half the interview. So you know the name. She is an American commentator, a lawyer, television news anchor, and she's got a brand new show on Newsmax. Again, the top host launches the new show on Newsmax. Greta Van Susteren is joining us right now. The Record with Greta Van Susteren on Newsmax. Greta, good morning. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate it very much.
I'm so disappointed. You said that you had a star, and I thought, oh, good, we're going to have someone interesting to talk to. I got all excited. I thought there's another person on the line. You were surprising me.
No, it's you. It's all you.
Oh, brother. Well, it's like, tell that to my cats and dogs that don't think that I move fast enough to feed them or do anything, or to my family or to my siblings who say I couldn't tie my shoes to the fourth grade. You know, it's like a whole other side of it.
Well, first of all, if you're going to mention them, you got to tell me about the dogs and cats. What do you got?
I have three big dogs and I have three cats, and my newest cat is a rescue from a kill shelter.
Oh.
And it's got the strangest personality, and we love him. He came as a kitten, so he developed his crazy personality amongst us, so we're to blame.
What kind of dogs
do you have? We have six right now. We had seven, lost a cat. Lost a cat who was 21 years old in February, named Ozzy, who I got from Sharon and Ozzy Osbourne.
Wait a second. Hold on. I just got to chill, because when did you lose this cat?
Ozzy, about February.
All right, so I lost my dog, Ozzy, in October. So not quite the same time, but my dog was also named after Ozzy Osbourne.
They gave them to me because I brought them to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Some people send flowers. I got a kitten, which I love.
Well, that's better. That's way better. Well, see, all right. So we have a little bit of a connection. So we both had something. We lost something named Ozzy here in the last year. So
All right.
You don't want to talk about that. You want to talk about your new show on Newsmax. I got to ask you, what's the difference between working at Fox and working at Newsmax?
Well, actually, the biggest difference, let me reframe your question a little bit, is that it's different than MSNBC, and it's this way.
I'm sorry.
When I went to CNN, it was sort of a startup. It was called Chicken Noodle Network when I first got there. Then I went to Fox, and it was likewise just getting started. It was about 5 years old, but it was not number one at that time, so it felt like a startup. Then I went to MSNBC, which I didn't have a good experience there, but aside from that, is that it had been in existence for 40 years as part of, or as NBC had, or 50 years.
Right.
And it was very corporate. The other two felt startup-ish because there was excitement. And that same excitement that you feel like a startup with something growing and taking off, I feel with Newsmax. So it's really fun for me. It's that same joie de vivre that you get with any startup. And they've given me 100% independence. I got a great staff. I got a great budget to do my show right, and we're about to move into a new studio. We've been in a rental studio the first 2.5 weeks.
And when can people watch that? What time are you on?
6 p.m. Eastern, or if anyone is on a public transportation, not driving, that probably wouldn't be a good idea. You can download the free Newsmax TV app. There's no firewall, so you can just watch it on News. You can watch Newsmax on a mobile app on your phone.
Yeah, it's the fastest growing station.
Driving.
No, not while driving. Probably not while driving. But no, you guys are, you're gaining steam on everybody. You're closing the gap on some of these biggies, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's exciting because, each show is different. And, you know, one of the complaints that people have, or the major complaint people have with cable news, and I feel like I'm sort of a student of it, having been in it so long, is that you can't tell opinion from fact anymore. That there's that journalists have so blurred that line. It's not like the old days in newspaper where you had your op-ed page and your editorial page and then you had your news page. It is now blended so that journalists are wearing their opinions on their sleeves, and that, of course, is not to me journalism. What I'm hoping to do on my show is that I'm starting to lead into the nighttime, and nighttime is typically opinion time, and opinion is important because you need a robust debate in this country about important issues. But I'm trying to keep mine fact-driven. I'm a lawyer. I taught evidence. I studied evidence. There's a difference between facts and opinion. And so I'm trying to sort of, is to maintain. The show's like all my other shows, and I hope people think that they're fact-driven.
So is there a different feel? I know we sort of gave us the go-round as far as the different networks, but not many people do what or have done what you've done. I bet you that maybe nobody has gone to all of these stations and had success at all of them, right, at this level, this high of a level. So you know, bouncing around, because obviously if you're on one network, there's a perception that, well, if you're on MSNBC, obviously you're a card-carrying liberal. If you're on Fox, you must be a conservative. How do you get rid of that stigma?
You know, I just stick to the facts, and factually don't change from network to network. You know, they should. And look, every time I go someplace, I hear from people, you're going to ruin your career. And I think, oh, big deal. Nobody dies on TV. You know, so I go back to practicing law or teaching. I mean, like, and all the people are so concerned about my career. In the 4 years I've been off cable, I had two shows simultaneously. One, a syndicated political show distributed by Gray TV across the country. Another on Voice of America that was distributed internationally. And I did a documentary on the Rohingya. So I've been really busy the last 4 years, but I missed cable. Cable is live and fun, so I missed it. But look, you know, I'm not in the wars with everybody. And, you know, sometimes I get texts, a tweet saying, you're a right-wing fascist. And I get other ones that says I'm a communist and a socialist.
Right.
I mean, for the same thing, I'm called both.
Right,
it's like,
right.
I can't be both, you know. But, you know, you just look. You know, you keep your eye on the ball. I'm a good American. I like facts. I like fairness. And I'm never going to be perfect, but right. I'm going to forever try to do my best.
I feel like if you get that comment from both sides on the same issue, and, you know, you've said the same thing on that issue, then you're doing something right. If you're, you know, if you're called, the right calls you this and the left calls you that, you're probably right around the bullseye of the topic that you're talking about, I would think.
Yeah, when it gets insulting.
Yeah.
That's when it becomes, you know, that, I don't mind the insult.
Right,
because that reflects on the person delivering them, not the person who receives them. You know, and people right now are really agitated about politics.
Yeah.
Really agitated. And if you say anything, I posted a picture of Liz Cheney hugging the witness the other day after the hearing. And as a lawyer, I looked at things through a legal lens. I didn't think that was particularly wise. She could have done it in her office because everybody's always watching, and the jury is the American people. Now, obviously, the Republicans and Democrats on the both sides of far sides of the spectrum have made up their minds, but there are independents who are watching this, and it's not the message as a questioner that I would want to convey that I'm so cozy with the witness, even though it's a nice thing to do, but it's something that people are watching. So I posted that just because that's how I look at the legal lens, is that from a strategy point of view, you want people to think that you're seeking the facts, not that you're cozy with the witness. And you would have thought that I was at the Capitol that day tearing down the building. You know, it was just, it was, people have reacted so violently to my tweet. You know, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it is remarkable sometimes the reaction that you get, and sometimes you sit back and you say, I don't understand how they see it that way, but that's how a lot of people see it. And, you know, speaking of the January 6th, we'll start with this real quick, because I actually have been an advocate for telling my listeners, even though it's a very conservative, right-leaning station, and I've been telling them, you should watch this thing. You should watch it, because that's sort of what Americans do. You should be part of the process and pay attention, and you know what's out there and you know what's being said. And the one thing that I can't get around, though, is I want to basically assimilate and absorb all this information, but if they're not going to present all sides, doesn't this become a waste of time?
Well, look, you know, it's not a courtroom. It's a political venue. And so naturally, it's very different. Yes, I mean, what I think should happen is that I think that now we've got these two Secret Service who come forward and say that this woman did that, what she said about grabbing the steering wheel or grabbing the throat or something didn't happen.
Right.
And so, and the committee obviously knew she was going to say that, but they didn't contact the Secret Service. Well, that in the courtroom doesn't seem particularly fair. Now they're in a position where they want to testify. So now the committee is sort of boxed in. They can call them and have their chief witness all of a sudden disputed, or they can fail to call, and then they're going to get clobbered in midterms with ads saying, you know, why didn't the committee do this? You know, that it's just the fix is in. So they're sort of boxed in. But the thing that I don't understand, this is, as from a lawyer, I talked about this with Alan Dershowitz last night, is that the things that she said were electrifying. They're absolutely electrifying. Anybody watching that would have been electrifying. My question is, you know, did they happen? And the question I have is that she was deposed four times. Did she say any of those things in the four times she was deposed? And that would tend to show that she didn't just all of a sudden show up the other day and make it up. Then I have the second question: is if she said those in deposition, why didn't they show them before? Because that was actually a very potent testimony. And did they all of a sudden have a surprise hearing on Tuesday? You know, like, so I, you know, and these are questions, maybe there's a legitimate answer for all of them, but those are questions that remain in my mind. So if we're talking about fairness, probably the thing we should do, but it may backfire on everybody, is to put all the depositions online.
Right.
So we can see everything and not just what's been cherry-picked by a particular side. And that would be, of course, you know, then you've got the thing is that the people who are nasty will grab different pieces of the videotape and do rotten things to the, you know, people who testify. So the whole thing is, in short, a mess. And every and 90% of the country has made up his or her mind without even seeing any of the testimony.
Right.
And the other 10% are the independents, and that's really who, you know, both political sides are trying to reach, because those are the ones that are going to throw the election in either direction.
Greta Van Susteren is our special guest today. The Record with Greta Van Susteren is on Newsmax, 6 o'clock. On, well, Eastern Time, Newsmax, you can get that just about anywhere now on just about any cable provider. All you got to do, if you don't have it, is probably make a phone call or two, and you will have it. You talked earlier about the polarization of politics in this country. I've been behind the mic here for a long time. I'm sure, you know, obviously you've been doing what you've been doing for a long time. I don't know if I've ever seen it this bad. I mean, people are no longer friends over this. People are, family members are not splitting. Well, yeah, they are splitting up. They're not going to Thanksgiving dinner because Joe is going to be there or Sally's going to be there, and they don't want to deal with the left-right confrontation that's happening. Have you ever seen it this bad?
No, I'm old, but not old as the Civil War. But no, I've never seen it this bad. But, it's like you have to dance around topics. And the worst thing is that if you say something inartfully, and this is even what you meant, people seize on it to the point where people are almost afraid to talk. Mm-hmm. And I think that's bad. It's like, you know, it used to be okay to have a different opinion. Now it's not.
Right.
And that's what, you know, and that is, you know, so fundamental to, you know, to a democracy. I mean, look, it's embodied in the First Amendment about free speech, free association, and freedom of the press. And now we've got these rules that have scared the living daylights out of people, because if you step over, people are not going to forgive you. You're not even allowed to change your mind. Like, if you say something inartfully and then you say, no, what I really meant, you're not even allowed to explain or put it in context or even change your mind with more facts.
I've got 20, listen, I got people that I consider my bestest of bestest friends, 20, 30 plus years of friends, and they have divorce themselves of me out of just politics. And I'm not even a lunatic, crazy right-wing nut. I mean, I feel I'm pretty centrist on a lot of issues, yet because they have a certain feeling about a certain thing, it becomes contentious. And I don't know. I it's very sad in some cases.
Or even worse is, before you even say anything, people have assumed. I mean, like, people assume that when I, you know, that I was at Fox, I was some right-wing lunatic.
Right.
When I was at MSNBC, I was some left-wing lunatic. It was the same show. In fact, many of the same staff
right.
moved over with me.
Sure.
You know, but it's like, you know, and I never, you don't even get a chance.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think we can do to actually pull us out of this malaise?
I think it's time to move on to the next generation. Yeah. I think it's time, I mean, for President Biden, President Trump, I'd love to see them sort of bury the hatchet. I mean, this is dreaming, of course.
Yeah.
And sit down, talk, and, you know, welcome the next generation to, like, you know, to compete against each other, Republicans and Democrats, because, and those two gentlemen would have, you know, have a lot of sway in this country. They could do much to turn the temperature down. It's not going to happen. But I think it, you know, it really is time that we sort of, you know, start over a little bit, because I don't see a healing. I just see people more entrenched in their position.
We haven't really touched on this too much, since you have that great legal background. Your thoughts on the decision on Friday, Roe versus Wade? Where do you think this is headed, and where do you think we are as a nation right now?
Well, that's another one where people just take sides and driven and have a lot of passion, but. There was a tweet by Senator Elizabeth Warren out of Massachusetts, and she said she was outraged by the decision and said that this should be a decision for the people. And I thought, well, actually, it is. I mean, it's either 9 justices deciding it, or it goes back to state legislators later, and which are elected by the people, and they get to decide. So in many ways, is that what she wants is it's been achieved by the decision, because each state will now have an opportunity to, you know, do whatever it wants with abortion. It's obviously an issue that people feel deeply committed to, you know, on both sides, you know, both sides of debate. So, you know, it was a decision I think many legal scholars saw coming for decades. That the Supreme Court had considered it in 1994 in case, I think it was 94 or 92, and the court recognizing that it would be like throwing a Molotov cocktail into our culture, took a very sort of narrow view and didn't decide Roe versus Wade from 1973. This court did. This court could have decided Dobbs versus Mississippi in a very narrow way and not just reverse Roe versus Wade. So here we are, and now the state legislatures will decide, and people can get out and politic and elect the people they want, and you know, they can get whatever they want on abortion state by state.
Once again, Greta Van Susteren is our guest. Newsmax is her new show. Well, she's on Newsmax, her new show, The Record with Greta Van Susteren, again, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you don't have it, you can find it on your cable provider relatively easily. I'll ask you one more, and I'll let you go. I appreciate
it. Can I say
one
other thing about, Roe versus Wade? It is intellectually honest to be pro-choice but think Roe versus Wade was wrongfully decided.
I agree with you. Oh my God! Yeah, you're so right. Yeah,
you know, it's like that. You know, that's sort of the, you know, the interesting thing about this from a purely intellectual standpoint on this decision.
I totally agree. Do you? But do you think the majority? It seems like, just to echo something else, it seems like the country, at least the numbers that I read, the country was comfortable, I guess, except the far right, really, with sort of what they had. Right, they were comfortable with that.
Well, yes, and I mean, if you look at the poll numbers, but I'll tell you what I think was a huge mistake, and this is just legally,
right,
is for the life of me, I don't understand why Justice Thomas wrote that concurring opinion and throws into the mix gay marriage and contraception, because that really, I mean, like, why did he bring that up? It wasn't even a question.
Right.
You know, and that, you know, that was, you know, that really, you know, that rattled the country even more. That was like, that was gratuitous, I thought.
Do you think Justice Roberts was on the right track? Because I don't, but I mean, you would know much more about this than me, but was on the right track trying to come to some middle ground?
I think, well, he's the leader of the court, and I think that he was trying to achieve that. He recognized where it was going, and we had sort of a dry run because of the leaked draft opinion in February.
Right.
I mean, he knew it was going to go, you know, what was going to happen. So I think he was trying, to get some consensus to lower the temperature. But,
yeah.
You know, obviously that didn't quite work out. Right, he has a little different job than the other eight justices.
Yeah. All right, one more. I see you're going to focus some of your time in your show on China. You're concerned about China, as am I. You know, they're building up their military at a record speed, and some of our ships and some of our weapons are actually becoming a little bit outdated and falling sort of short of where they should be. China, a serious issue for us?
Oh, you know what? This is tragedy. I've traveled the world. I've been all over. I've been North Korea three times, all over China. I've been in a lot of places in the world in the last 20-some years. And while we were consumed with Iraq and Afghanistan, is if you went to any place, went to Africa, went to, you know, Asia, went to the Middle, you have seen the infrastructure that China was building with their Belt and Road Initiative, which is their infrastructure program. They were building up friends and allies and gaining power while we were consumed with something else. Well, now here we are, and China's got its foot on our throat. All our generic drugs, the components for it, come from China. I mean, if they decide someday to stick it to us, I mean, if you're on heart medicine, I don't know what you're going to, I mean, we got a problem. But now, finally, Biden and Europe and the other European allies are talking about a global partnership initiative on infrastructure so that we can try to catch up to China and gain influence. But is it one of the problems that we've had, and it's a very complicated issue, is that when we go to help other countries, and, you know, this is a complicated issue, is that we fold into it human rights issues. Like, if somebody's really horrible, we won't work with that country. Really horrible. It's a factor. China, on the other hand, is completely business-oriented, and so they've gone into these places and gotten friends. that we, you know, that we made a diplomatic or political decision not to make friends with. So,
right.
So China is so far ahead of us on infrastructure, on gaining allies in some of these very mean-spirited countries that we are so far behind, it's unthinkable. And of course, if you tune in Monday night, I hope you do, at 6 p.m., I have an interview with Cantor Freedom, the basketball player.
Is supporting
the Uyghurs. I also have a woman who is a Uyghur whose sister is a doctor in China who was taken into custody or detention camp 3 or 4 years ago because her sister, who became an American, spoke out against China. And now her sister hasn't been heard from, who's a doctor in northwestern China. So, I mean, it's like, I hope you watch Monday. It's all about religious freedom and what's going on in China. And don't get me started.
Well, absolutely.
We all took you into the next hour.
We'll all be watching that on Monday. And, you know, I rarely agree with Biden, but Biden had proposed something the other day, like $400 billion, and billion now is like it's chump change now. But $400 billion for us to begin these projects in some of these third world nations where China is already doing that. And I actually thought that was not that I like to give our money away, I rarely do, but in this case, I think we need to make some inroads, in particular in Africa, et cetera, with us actually doing more good than harm, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, when I was in northern Africa, in South Sudan, which is a separate country from Sudan, and I saw this oil drilling, and I said, who's drilling all that oil? And the president, I was having dinner with the president of South Sudan, then with about 10 other people, and he said, oh, that's the Chinese.
Mm.
And that was in South Sudan, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, and they're drilling the oil. Well, you know, if you're in my hometown, Appleton, Wisconsin, you're thinking like, well, that's so far away. What do I care about Taiwan, for instance? That's so far away. But Taiwan is where these very sophisticated microchips are made. And if you like your iPhone, or you like your car, or you like your refrigerator, or you like anything, microchips are very important. And about 92% of the sophisticated microchips that the world needs for weapons and a lot of things we drive around in are made in Taiwan. So if you're in Appleton, you better care if China's going to move into Taiwan or not.
Greta, great stuff. I can't wait to watch your show. I'm sure everybody's going to be right by their television excited. 6 o'clock on Newsmax every single weeknight. Make sure you check that out. That's Eastern Standard Time. Is there an alternate website associated with this, or you just go through Newsmax?
Just go to Newsmax TV is the app. That's the free app. Or you can go to Newsmax.com if you're on your computer. Or you can watch your old-fashioned TV, that thing that sits in the room with the doily on the top.
Yes, I'm old enough. I know. I've heard of it. Yes. I hate watching stuff on the internet. Thank you, Greta. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Goodbye.
You too. Have a good one. She was great. All right. All right. We'll get back to, I think Gordon Vidal is on deck, so stick around. I can't